Okay, this coming Shabbos, we're going to have the honor and privilege of reading Parshas Pinchas, which of course jumps up and opens with the understanding Pinchas ben Elazar ben Aaron HaKohen Heishives Chamosi. Pinchas returned my anger. And the question has to be raised, what was the result of Pinchas' actions? Why was he so rewarded? After all, the sin continued until 24,000 people had died. So what exactly was the great mile of what he did? So Rav Nassim Siwachvogel explains that Pinchas gets the credit for making the start towards correcting the mistakes of the people around him. And the Medrash credits Kalev as well. At the time of the Meraglim, not because he was able to stop the Meraglim entirely, but that he was able to start a change. And because he was able to start the change, he stayed off the entire Jewish nation being destroyed at the time of the Meraglim. Sometimes it's just the fact that you make a change from a errant process that is reason enough to be rewarded. And that, of course, is the first lesson that perhaps we can take from the Parsha. We also find out, the Torah tells us, the command of Hashem Tzaroras HaMidyanim to take care of the Midyanim because they're enemies. Kitzorim Heim Lachem, right? They're thorns in your side. They're sworn enemies. Because of what happened with Kuzbi, the daughter of Midian, who is referred to as Achusam, their sister. Now, we normally identify people who descend from a nation as B'nehem or B'nosehem. Why is it as sons or daughters? So why is it that Kuzbi is identified as a sister, as Achusam? So the Mechilta and Shmos notes that Kuzbi's called a sister because she gave her life for the nation of Moab. And in that regard, she's similar to Shimon and Levi, who are identified as Achei Dina, as the brothers of Dina, because they also, it speaks to their commitment and the risk of life that they took for Dina, right? Kuzbi also, she risked her life for the nation of Moab. And from here, the Tolna Rebbe Zatzal used the Pasuk as a proof text to teach us a valuable lesson, that even as the Torah castigates Kuzbi's evil act of prostitution, which led to the deaths of so many, Chazal were also able to find her devotion to her people to be something of significance for which she deserved some respect. And if Chazal can do so, says the Rebbe, we too can find something positive to see in our fellow Jews. Afterwards, we, in the Parsha, go on to study the census of the Jewish people, at which time we're told, Ubnei Korach lo mesu, the children of Korach didn't die. And why were the sons of Korach, who Rashi explains were involved from the beginning in the actions of Korach, why were they able to do tshuva and be saved while Korach was not? After all, doesn't the Torah tell us? The Gemara says that a certain Arab came along and listened in the ground and was able to hear Korach and his family screaming, Moshe emes v'soraso emes, that Moshe was speaking the truth and his Torah was the truth. So the late great Rabbi Elia Baruch Finkel Zatzal, one of the Rosh Yeshiva of Namir, explains that Korach only began his claim after he had died. But the B'nai Korach caught the last chance. And when we grab the final minutes, or as Rav Teitz used to point out on a number of occasions at Ne'ilah, when we jump the train, we still have the opportunity to be saved. With a Korach Lomesu, there's always that magic moment that a person needs to run ahead and grab. Ubnei Korach lo mesu. And then the Torah tells us later on that after the census, Ube'ela lo haya ish, from all the people who were counted, there was no man who remained from the original accounting of Moshe and Aaron in the desert. Why? Because HaKadosh Baruch Hu commanded Mosum Suba Midbar, right, that they should all die in the desert, and except for Yoshua and Kalev, we're told that everybody else died. And Rashi notes that the word ish is gender specific, because actually the women were not subjected to the decree of dying in the Midbar after the Chet HaMeraglim. The women actually loved the land, and they desired to get a portion in the land. In fact, Klayaka goes so far over here as to suggest that Hashem would have rather sent the women as Meraglim than the men, because they would have been more successful. And Rav Moshe Tzvi Neria picks up on the fact that both Moshe and Aaron's accounting is stressed here in context. Why is that? Why is it so important that Moshe and Aaron were the ones who did the accounting? So Rav Moshe Tzvi Neria explains that there were three primary leaders of the Jewish people in the desert. Moshe, Aaron and Miriam. And while Moshe and Aaron were not successful at getting the men excited to enter the land of Israel, Miriam seems to have been more successful. And why was that? So Rav Nariak suggests that it's because Miriam danced and sang with the women. She didn't merely teach and speak to them. She made sure to interact with them, and she shared their ideas, and she elevated the ideas and the women in the process. And from an educational perspective, this can bring about much more success. But still, at the same time, the great Jewish anchorwoman, Mrs. Sivan Rahav Meir, who is a phenomenal teacher of Torah in Yerushalayim, she cautions that together with this aspect of education, a leader needs to be able to raise the people. He has to give them something to strive for in their own lives. There needs to be a combination of both, a certain sense of striving, somebody to look up to, a demus, but also somebody who's able to elevate you and pull you up in the process, not just somebody who speaks at you. These are the dual aspects that take place in Parashas Pinchas. And of course, we come to the next lesson, the lesson of the Benos Slavchad, who stand, V'tamodna l'fnei Moshe v'lfnei Elazar HaKohen v'lfnei HaNesiim. And it's interesting that that word Nesiim is one of the three times where the word Nesiim is spelled without a yud. Now, the other two situations where we talk about the word Nesiim spelled incorrectly without the Yud is when the Nesiim brought the stones and also when they bring their karbanos. But in those two instances, the word Nesiim lose the Yud because it was a response for the Nesiim not responding enthusiastically at the point in time that they were supposed to lead the Jewish people at the time of donations to the Mishkan. Why the loss of the Yud here in this context? So the great Rav Chaim Kanievsky's Shalita explains that although Benos Slavchad stood before them, the Nesiim were there for ceremonial purpose only. Clearly, if Moshe and Aaron didn't have an answer, the Nesiim wouldn't either. And to show their limited nature here, the Yud is dropped just as it is in the other place. Then Moshe Rabbeinu is commanded to appoint a new leader, Yahushua, and he's told, V'nasata mehodcha alav, you should give from your glory to him. And why do we assume the principle of Gadol Shimusho Yoser Milimudo? Why do we assume that Yahushua was going to be something great simply because he served more than he learned from Moshe Rabbeinu? The fact that he served Moshe was even more important. So Rav Yashiv Zatzal suggested that when one learns from the teacher's actions, that person learns the halacha correctly and can assess the proper path from among other ones. Alternatively, Rav Yashiv suggests that when a person sees the Rebbe and how the Rebbe acts, it provides that person with a means of not forgetting the proper psak. We tend to remember the story or the actions the way we saw it better than we may remember the page. However, most importantly, says Rav Yashiv, when one watches how a good Rebbe observes the halacha, when he sees just frankly what the Rebbe does to learn the halacha, right, then one learns proper Yerushalayim. It's not just a lesson in what to do, but what the best way to do it is as well. The bulk of the last number of Aliyahs in the Pasha deal with the Karbanos, certain ones that are brought every day, and then the ones that are brought on the various special occasions in Yamim Tovim. So when it comes to the Karban HaTamid, we're told, Olas Tamid Hawasu Yav Har Sinai, that there's a Tamid offering that was made at Har Sinai. But of course, it's kind of weird. Where was Karban HaTamid offered at Har Sinai? So the Gemara in Chagiga on Daf Vav Amud Aleph debates as to whether the Karbanos were offered at Har Sinai were the Karban HaTamid, or whether it was a Karban Re'iah. Now, why, if in either case, why are we connecting Karbanos to Har Sinai? So Rav Shachter Shalita would often tell us that while creativity and originality are important expressions of one's Tzelem Elokim, that's so when one is a Talmud Vasik, and the Chiddush is a Chiddush Amiti, it's a correct insight or idea. But if the Chiddush is not what Rav Shachter would often say, Eisgehalten, then it's not actually a Chiddush, it's a Shinui. Shinui is not acceptable. Says Rav Shachter to us that this was a problem when Kayan originally came up with the idea of a Karban. Kayan thought that since Hashem doesn't really need a karban, and the whole idea of bringing a karban is a symbolic act, so why should he bring the best stuff? So all he did was offer something of an inferior quality. Hevel, on the other hand, was not the original thinker. He copied the idea of Kayan, but he improved it, and he brought the best of his sheep. So the Torah tells us, Vayisha Hashem el Hevel ve'el minchaso, that Hevel's karban was accepted, while Kayan's was not. And we all know the end of the story. And it's and the story, the end of the story, and the morals not to, is that to be oisgehalten, to be correct, is more important than to be original. The Karban HaTamid, as Rav Schachter has pointed out to us in a number of occasions, attains its special nature not simply because of its spirituality. It's spiritual because it follows the commands of Har Sinai. It's not the spirituality of putting the animal day in and day out on the Mizbeach that makes it significant. It's the fact that putting the animal on the Mizbeach day in and day out connects us back to Mamad Har Sinai. Not in a sense of spirituality, but in a sense of Kedusha, the way God wanted it done. That's what makes it special and unique. And if we understand that and put it to heart, then certainly most of our life and the process of creativity within the context of Masorah will be able to be understood and carried out. Finally, we begin the first of the three Haftoros of Paranios this week with the opening perek of the book of Yirmiyahu. And of course, Yirmiyahu is called to the tremendous task of having to step up to the plate and speak to the people and to serve as a Navi. And Yirmiyahu, of course, not too excited about this. He says to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I really don't want to. Hinei lo yadati l'daber. Hinei lo yadati daber ki nara nochi. He says, I can't speak, but and I don't know how to, because I'm merely a lad. And Rabbi Yerucham Levavitz Atzal, the famous Mashgiach, pointed out that there were many times in Jewish history where we lose opportunities to be great people because we say, I'm too whatever to be the one to stand up to the plate and say or do the right thing. And actually, Pinchas was the opposite. Pinchas stood up and did the right thing, even though the people challenged him and spoke behind his back. Hashem tells Yirmiyahu not to fall into thinking that is the opposite of Pinchas' style. Standing by idle allows destruction to continue. And that, of course, is unfortunately what we have learned, unfortunately, too much through our past. It's not just the Kamsa and the Hahu Gavra that caused the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. It was the people who stood by, Hohu V'lo Michu. We have a responsibility in Jewish life to stand up for the right way, the Torah way. We have a responsibility in Jewish life to point out that when things don't follow HaKadosh Baruch Hu's means, that we have to say, this isn't cool. And we have a responsibility to make sure that we get ourselves back to a situation where we're able to get to Nechamas Tzion V'Yerushalayim B'mehera B'Yameinu Shabbat Shalom to all.